Okay, we have not yet formally started, but I would take a bit of a survey here. How many of you have taught less, this is either your first year or you have taught less than 5 years? So would you mind raising your hands, okay? All right, how many of you have taught more than 5 years? Okay, any of you more than 10? 15? 20? 25? I can go up indefinitely, so we are going to get to the end there somewhere. Okay, awesome. So, most of you were under 5, and then majority of you, some of you went more than that. Okay, that was interesting too. Let's do a little bit of a geographical survey then. How many of you do not live in the United States? So I'll raise my hand. I don't. What's that?
So you live out of the country, eh?
How many of you have lived outside the United States? Okay, a couple of you. So how many of you live in the east of the Mississippi? Okay, west of the Mississippi? Majority. How many of you know what the... how many of you would consider yourselves in the southern part of the United States? Okay. How many of you consider yourselves in the northern part of the United States? Okay. Some of you aren't sure. Midwest, let's go that. All right, yeah, okay, that's pretty good. All right, very good. That was purely informational for me, that's it. Okay, if you want, there's another one over there. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and just start, and then maybe we'll quit early. Hey. Amazing. Okay, let's just stand and have a short word of prayer. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lord, for this time together. Thank you that you are Lord, that is our gospel, and we proclaim that. Be Lord of our hearts, be Lord of this class, be Lord of our schools. Amen. Can you be seated? Okay. I know some of you. Aaron and I have known each other for what seems like longer than what we actually have, I think. But I enjoy seeing him and wife and child here, so that's nice. Okay. This is my Uncle David, who is one of my mentors growing up. And then a lot of you I'm not quite placing. I'm now old enough to start knowing your parents. And that kind of thing. So it's good to see you. So you have your list, as you can see, it's simply questions. That's basically what we're going to be talking about, is just questioning and trying to find some answers and some maybe some sources and stuff. Let me ask a really silly question here. Well, let's start with a different one. Do we all know what motivation is? Okay, so you're here, and I'm almost certain that none of you came because you want to find out what is motivation. So how would you describe motivation? There are actually two technically correct answers, but only one of them are we going to focus on. Okay, so go ahead. Your teachers, you get to speak up. What's motivation? Eagerness to learn, good.
Desire to do something,
good. All right. That's the one that we're going to be focusing on more or less, a desire and a willingness to work at a goal or for something, okay, with a specific object in mind. For those of you who love words, which are probably most of you, in fact, let's just say are most of you, because teachers love words. The other definition of motivation, which you probably know, is the reason why you do something. The reason behind doing something is also called motivation. What was her motivation for what she said and did? That's not necessarily the motivation we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about a desire to fulfill a goal. Okay? Right? So that's the first one. What is motivation? A desire and a willingness to fulfill a task that is set before us, a goal, Maybe goal is the best word, because there are all kinds of things. So let's just talk about that a tiny bit. What is something you would like to do that you have not yet done? Can you just tell me? You can raise your hand if you like. We don't really want to do anything.
Go skydiving.
I do not have that motivation. Now, I am officially, as of about 3 weeks ago, a father-in-law. And my son-in-law went skydiving. Before he was my son-in-law. He wanted to. I don't know if he wants to again. But I have a couple students, and my students, and a friend, whatever they're with. And that's not one of my things, but I admire it. I actually just saw a video of these guys who went, what do they call it, wingsuit diving. Just the video terrified me. Like, getting up to the edge of that cliff and knowing I'm going over that thing. Well, thank you. Someone else, what's something you would like to do that you have not yet done?
Go to Switzerland.
That's an awesome goal. That one we're all for. No. I'm going to tease you a bit, but don't take it personally, okay? All right.
Visit
the Holy Land. Yes.
Teach school.
Yes.
Amen.
So by answering that means that this is your first year coming up.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. You know what? Every one of us who have taught school have had a first day. Now, we might have substituted before. It's not the same. But we have had a first day, and we might have had the coming together and do all that stuff that they do the first day, and if you weren't the principal by default or whatever, then you didn't have to do too much. And then you go back to your room and the door gets shut and it gets quiet. First one. There are many more to follow. It gets better, and even that one can be really good, but it is kind of a shock. Here I am. So, we've all been there, we have survived. You will too, okay? It'll be good, okay? Something else. What are some things that you would like to do, you have a desire to do? I just think you should be saying piles of them.
Be a pilot.
Sorry?
Be a pilot,
good, thank you. Keep going.
Go to Ireland,
yes. Love this travel thing. I'm gonna work on that someday, okay? One more yet.
Raise my dog.
Yes! You have not yet done this, huh? Well, you better get started.
Thinking about it.
Now, let me tell you, you're going to be challenged as to who is raising who here before too long. But anyway. Yes. All right. I'm going to try to stay fairly motivated, and I'm going to apologize about my voice. I have a bit of a cough, and my voice does not sound natural to me. I twisted it in a highly emotional moment. And I didn't know that this could even happen, but it is like I gave it a twist of something that it has never completely recovered from. And so, whatever, bear with me. I do get a bit of a cough sometimes, and then other times it's good, and whatever. So, I'll do my best here. I'm pretty much the same? Okay, good. Maybe I twisted my hearing. Okay. Whatever. All right, motivation. I think the fact that you're here, and I'm actually surprised that so many of you are here, but I think the fact that you're here shows you're interested in being a motivated teacher. All right, so I'm talking about motivation here, and we want to kind of keep this in mind. We gain motivation, we can lose motivation, all right? And so how do we keep it or regain it or something like that? Now, if you are willing to be vulnerable, I would really like to know which one of these interests you the most. I really want to kind of go where you are in this class, okay? All right, so you more experienced teachers, the ones who raised their hand with 10 years and above, have you had the experience of losing motivation? Anybody willing to? Okay, so I taught 26 years. I have not taught the last 2 years. I may teach this coming year. I don't know yet. Only someone would ask me. Still hope. No, that's not it. I know what it is like to lose motivation, okay? And to struggle with it. I also know what it's like to have motivation, okay? So have you struggled with losing motivation, or are you more interested in gaining it and keeping it? Anybody able to say? Okay, that's what you would like to focus on more. Okay, keep. Well, how do we gain and keep it? Okay, all right, good. All right. Don't say that's what our default is. We're going to talk about the other stuff either. I really want to meet you where you are, and then go from there. So this is your class. Please come with your questions and answer, or speak up with your questions and answers as you have them. You don't seem an extra talkative bunch already. Maybe we can work on that a little bit here. Okay, what is motivations? Why should teachers be motivated? And we could, a part way of answering that is, what happens when teachers are not motivated? So what do you think? Why should teachers, we're going to assume teachers should be motivated. So why should they be? If you were really my students, I would make you speak up. I would find a way of making every one of you talk. But you're off the hook a bit. Someone started.
The students learn.
So students learn. So motivation, teacher motivation helps students learn. Okay. Now in my introduction, I gave a little quip. That's cool. I gave a little quip that I think my dad told me one time. I'm not even 100% sure if it was him, and he taught also a few years. That there are no there are no bad students, there are only unmotivated students. Have you heard that before? Have you thought about that? Have you heard it? Okay. What do you think about that?
I think it's right. Everybody's motivated. I'm highly motivated to eat pepperoni pizza. Less motivated to change my daughter's pamper.
Well, just wait a while.
But our students are motivated. They really are, for something. Just maybe not for language arts. Mm-hmm.
So if a student gets motivated for language arts, they will become a good student in language arts. Okay?
Much better student.
Well, there you go. I think we can hang on to that one. A much better student, right? So there are different gifts that are not completely dependent on motivation. There are handicaps that motivation cannot overcome, right? But I think the key is that everybody becomes better when they're motivated, right? In teachers and students. So I think we would say the same thing with teachers. There are people who are, teaching is not their gift and probably don't belong in the classroom unless it is very, very necessary or whatever, like an emergency of some kind, or just nobody else is going to do that. With leadership and so on, there are probably people that is not their calling. Most people are going to be teachers in one way or another. All right, and then we're talking specifically about in the schoolroom. There is a gift that comes with that, seems like some people are specifically tapped with that gift. And then maybe there are some people who learn it almost from scratch, all right? But there probably are no really good, long-lasting teachers who are not motivated to an extent. And all teachers become better when they're motivated. Right? So whether they're good teachers or not, they're at least better teachers. And that's really what we're kind of aiming for. None of us are perfect. All of us have made mistakes. We have made mistakes in parenting, and we will make mistakes in parenting, and that type of thing. And that can become a cycle for a whole set of excuses and reasons why things go whatever, wrong or good to an extent. But we need to be motivated in our leadership. And as teachers, we're called to be motivated then. So we have a responsibility. What happens when teachers are not motivated?
The students probably won't be either.
Yeah. Well, they're probably not already. No, we love motivated students. And there is a kind of a core in a school, as you can tell whether students are motivated or not. But I have struggled with unmotivated students, and particularly where I've lived in the past, basically 10 plus years, where the winters are long and dark and cold, it seems like that impacts motivation until they get to playing hockey. Now that does somehow get motivation going in a way that few other things do. But you know, they come down and they're not real happy sometimes, just whatever, tired and a bit gloomy. It seems like that impacts us. What happens when teachers are not motivated? It impacts the motivation of the school and their students. Can we get just a little bit more specific about that?
I think it can affect their grades.
It can affect their grades, yes. Maybe in a multiple, in a number of different ways. For one thing, they're just not interested. And another thing is they're not getting quite the teaching that would prepare them for what they need to do to pass those tests and so on. I would encourage you as teachers, be thinking ahead as you teach. Now this helps after you've taught a number of years, the same classes, the same books, you kind of know what's coming, right? No burdens on the first teachers here, okay? Just survive. That's all you need to do here. Survive, enjoy it, learn some stuff. You'll figure some out. Students and their parents are tremendously forgiving of someone who is motivated and has a pure heart toward them, right? They will forgive you, and you will not do things quite as smoothly as you learn to later. But as you get a little bit of experience, prep your students for what you know is coming. That takes a little bit of motivation, right? Thinking ahead and some intentionality, all right? Okay, what happens when teachers are not motivated? What I find is that the schools wither, if that's a way of putting it. The teacher withers. The school life kind of withers a tiny bit, and maybe a lot of it. And a point I might make, it seems like it kept coming up in all my classes as I thought through these classes, is that all things are connected. We live in a web, all right? And when one thing is really negative, that flows over into other things as well. And it works the other way. When you are positive, when you're really positive about something, that impacts other things. Other things that you just can't be that positive about with everything or that knowledgeable about with everything. It somehow flows over. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Okay. Anybody else have anything more on that?
Sometimes teaching is hard enough that without an inner fire, a motivation, you'll burn out. You'll lose your way as a teacher.
Yes.
You won't be able to complete the task. Like, it takes a fire.
There you go. So we're gonna come to losing it in a bit, and we are gonna talk about it, even if you don't want to, because you're probably gonna struggle with it sometime along the line. And I want to specifically talk about weariness and burnout, and maybe what I might call a survival mode. So the motivation can help pull us through that. Okay. Speak up if you have something else to say, or if you want to go back to something, please feel free. Okay. How does motivation come naturally? All of us are naturally motivated with some things, like Aaron was saying with these students. He's motivated. Yeah, all right. About what? That's the question. What are we motivated? One of my favorite memories, actually, of teaching at Seymour is I had these Raeliano boys for quite a number of years, and they were hunters, and I was not a hunter. I am not a hunter. I live in a hunter's paradise up there. I'm not a hunter. But in Missouri, I don't think I lived in a hunter's paradise, but these guys were still hunters. And one of my favorite memories is the three of them would get to school fairly early, and they would come crowd around my desk and instantly tell me about what all was happening with their game cams or with what they were hunting or what they're looking for or something like that. They were motivated. And they were going to speak about it, and it was just a joy for me to listen to that. How does motivation come naturally? So,
something I'm interested in.
There you go.
I'm more motivated to teach writing than math because I'm more interested in it.
There you go. The things we're interested in. is means we are naturally motivated for that, right? Okay, whatever that is. I had just a little bit of a light bulb moment last September with this. So one of the things about not teaching school the last 2 years, I could do something else in September. A number of you might know my brother Brian, and we had the absolute joy. I have three brothers, and we're all married, and we four brothers and our wives met in Greece. And I love the country of Greece, and I like touring these ancient places, and then there are other things to do, and then I like talking about ancient history and how it impacts us today. And we were in Corinth, right? So Corinth, where Paul wrote the letter of the Corinthians, to that place, you know? And we toured the Roman Corinth, and then I can't go into all this history, but there's an Acropolis. And of course, the Acropolis is the hill, the high places it talks about in the Old Testament that the kings were supposed to keep knocked down. So the high place up there where they would have had temples, and there were some very ungodly things that happened. But also, it became a fortress, and it's one of the highest Acropolises in the Acropolis in the Peloponnese. So we're down at the bottom of this, in this modern town of the little village of Corinth, and we're eating, and so the question was, and it's kind of hot, do we want to walk up there, or do we want to drive up there? Well, I love to walk up there, and man, yeah, let's walk. Do you guys want to walk? I'm good to walk. And Brian just laughs, hey man, it's Steven, it's hot, and Steve wants to go on a hike. That is just dumb. He wants to go climb a mountain. All right, why? I was interested. I love that stuff, and I am highly motivated when it comes to exploring these ancient sites and these ruins. You know, you can get ruined out pretty fast, but it's a little harder for me. So we become motivated naturally by our interests. There is one other thing that really leads to motivation.
Need.
Good. I'll just build on that a tiny bit. The word I was thinking of is what is urgent or important. And so the need kind of ties in that. If fire breaks out, we become motivated, right? When there is a definite urgency and we know the urgency, we seek it, we're aware of it, that impels us forward. So let's now talk about how does motivation come naturally. Now, how can we gain motivation non-naturally? I don't want to say it's unnatural. It's like, it's not just that quick thing to come. So what I'm going to suggest is if you enjoy writing, you're going to have to work at gaining motivation in math. That's what you said, right? And if you love words like I do, you may get frustrated actually teaching it because of the lack of motivation. I actually found I love teaching math, all right? So it's terribly enjoyable, right, to teach math. So this can kind of flip around a little bit in surprising ways for you. But we know we should work, we should become motivated in other stuff. And that's probably one of the reasons you're here, is you're sensing that, how do I gain this, right? The stuff that I already know, that I'm just interested in, I'm kind of motivated. So how do I gain motivation in what isn't as natural? All right.
Learn more about it.
There you go.
For me, I did not like playing with when I was in school, so going into teaching, I didn't particularly enjoy teaching language to begin with, but now that I've learned more about it, I actually sort of enjoy it.
There you go. So learn more about it. Can we build on that a tiny bit?
Sometimes for me, I have to choose to want to know more about it.
Yes. So intentionally seeking some knowledge. Something, just get in there and dig a little bit, and something interesting is going to pop up. All right, that we're gonna find. All right, so be intentional about seeking out some stuff that you're not naturally interested in. Right. So I could give you a whole list of things I'm not naturally interested in. All my brothers are mechanics. I am a non-mechanical genius. I cannot do things well with my hands, and it's not that whatever. I just don't like it. But get interested in how an engine works. Right. Well, how does something go from fuel, whatever kind of fuel it is, to something else moving down the road or in the sky? something like that. There are all kinds of interesting dynamics that are going on with that, but you have to dig a little bit. I'm not a specialist in biology or zoology at all, really, but I do love animals, and I find reading some nature stuff, where I watched a video recently of the killer frogs in the east part of Angola. All right, do you know anything about the killer frogs in eastern Angola? It was just shocking to me that something like this even exists. It's incredible. And I will say that the video actually brings a little bit of the terror to the whole thing. These things eat snakes, poisonous snakes, like terribly poisonous snakes. And they crunch them right down. They have teeth. So I almost guarantee you that you find, you dig into that kind of, it gets interesting, right? So, but it takes a little bit of intentionality and then being willing to share that with your students. This is what I find that's very important. Be interested in people and in things or events or something. Something wholesome, something good, get interested in it and then share it, right? Share it as you live. It doesn't have to be that directly connected, but it is amazing how what you are indirectly working with over here, all of a sudden it pops up in your classroom, a place where it's appropriate, where you think about it. Oh, look at this. and you share it. It brings a spark of creativity and spontaneity into your classroom. So how do we gain motivation? Non-naturally, we have to intentionally study. Someone mentioned language arts, right? You did, right? Okay, so growing up, I would not have been interested in grammar whatsoever, right? I really didn't see the need for it. You had to learn a diagram and whatever else, but that kind of thing. I am fascinated with grammar now. And for a variety of reasons. I don't do well with learning languages, but I'm fascinated by them, all right? And the fact that these vibrations travel to the air and they mean things to people. Okay, and stuff that just does not make sense to somebody else who isn't wired for it. Well, how can you get the wiring? It's just terribly interesting to me. And I found out that grammar is very important for understanding the structure of language, which is a whole nother subject, and understanding English grammar well does help you learn other languages well, incidentally. I'm just going to tell you that. Other languages are deeply grammatical in ways that English isn't. English is vocabulary rich and grammatically weak. It has a very easy, simple, incredibly simple grammar, all right? Other languages don't, right? It's deeply, deeply complex and much less vocabulary. So they depend on their grammar for expressing things that are quite, quite interesting. All right, that's off the subject. But as you learn this grammar and as you wrestle with these things, how do you get interested in it? Is there a way to do it? What do you think? Okay, I'll give you a suggestion. What I found for me is I love listening to the great courses, and I want to be careful about what all I suggest. How many of you are familiar with the great courses? Have you heard of them? Right? You can get them on Audible. They have their own website where at least they used to sell CDs and that kind of thing. There's a guy named, now it skips my mind. If you Google great courses and languages, this fella comes up. He has a sense of humor, and he will teach you things about language. Now, he's a secularist. He's not a Christian, right? I'll tell you that. But he will teach you things about language that you did not know. I will guarantee that. All right? He's a linguist, and he speaks with humor and lightness. Sometimes a little bit too much humor, maybe about a little tiny bit of risque humor comes in occasionally, but not that much. So keep your minds good and learn this stuff. It's terribly interesting, and you will be amazed how you will find, looking at your language books, how it's different when you see how grammar is wired into the human brain. And one other thing. Understanding and working with grammar correctly helps you to be an articulate speaker in ways that we practically do not know why. We don't know why we're that way, but that is human language. It's just language, period. There is no other language besides human. Well, the Bible speaks about the language of angels, I guess. But animals don't have language. Now, if you want to debate that, I'll talk to you about it later. Animals can communicate, but they don't have language. So there's a difference. Interesting. Okay. So how do we gain motivation non-naturally? We need to
study.
Study. We need to intentionally study. And what are some other things?
People. Find the people who inspire us and go and just...
So, what I'm going to say with that is cultivate relationships. Now, relationships can take you downhill. We all know that. I'm talking about cultivating wholesome relationships. And even people who have difficulties and struggles, you can have wholesome relationships with them, including your students, right? But learn what you're feeding off of and what's going into you, right? You work on that. Be really intentional about that. Find people. One of the great things that happens at this gathering is networking, and you can find friends and you can make friends. Now, we are wired in such a way that we really need friends that last more than a week, right? We need that. But it is interesting how you can connect with someone for a week and then meet them again a year later for another week, and that relationship warms. It doesn't rob us of other deeper relationships, it just adds to it, right? So you need more relationships than the people you find right here. But right here, there is a wealth of interest, of interesting people. Okay, so talk to Aaron about climbing mountains in Kashmir sometime. Okay, you will get interested. Okay, so be interested in other people. Study intentionally, cultivate good relationships. Anything else? Perhaps, I don't know how easy this is. Maybe you can answer it. I think one of the things that is really good for study is developing a level of wholesome curiosity. There is something like carnal curiosity that is something we need to guard against, but there is wholesome curiosity. Now, here's a problem. What do you think? People are either curious or they're not. Can we cultivate curiosity in ourselves? What do you think? You say, well, yeah, if you do, that's because you're already curious, right? I think we can, although I would say this, if you had a teacher that helped cultivate that, inspire you as a child to be curious about the interesting things that are in life, you were already motivated for that as an adult. And that if you're just lukewarm, if I can put it that way, as an adult and just you're not interested, I think it's a lot more difficult to start getting interested. But find ways to become curious, okay? Anybody else have anything to say about that?
So I would like to ask, how can you become curious about science?
Yes, it's so boring.
Absolutely. Hey, animals, totally different. That's boring.
Yeah, okay, so biology we're okay with.
Right.
Zoology, yeah, all right. But so why things like lever or levers?
Exactly. How can you become interested?
Yeah. Okay, how do we become, this? What she's really asking is how do you become interested in things that are not interesting?
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Well, I wonder if it's not a little bit like somebody once said about people, that there is no such a thing as a boring person. Even the most boring people we know, if we would know them, they would turn into these fascinating, why do they do the things they do? And I think these boring subjects, I have a list of them too, they are interesting. But it takes a tremendous amount of discipline to dig and find and watch them eating frogs and, I don't know, make a
take a frog apart.
And sometimes you have to live on the... You know, maybe you have a student that is inspired and let him kind of inspire in the class to mm-hmm. kind of cultivate that. I don't know. There's
yeah, good.
Ways of doing it.
Thank you. Someone else? All right. Maybe what he's saying there is if there's something that is boring to us, find somebody who is interested in it and find out why they're interested in it, what interests them in it, and that will open the gate a bit to getting us in there, all right? But I also want to tell you that I think that's important with motivation. We'll talk about this a little bit more again, I hope. But we can, my goal here is not to put you on a guilt trip. We should be motivated science teachers. Yeah, we should be. I am not. And I have actually tried. I can say that with a pure conscience. And there are some things that I have managed to work even in science and stuff like that, and it's partly because it is overwhelming in our schools how many things we are expected to master and to talk about and to monitor. In Seymour, I typically taught 4 grades. I had to have classes with all of them. I just wish I could have 2. What would it be like to have 2 grades, only 2 grades, every subject? That would be so delightful. In Baytree, then, it's been 4 through 12, all right? Now, that has narrowed. So gradually, it's become more like 7 through 12, all right? Which is much more workable, right? There is no way to be the best at everything and all of that. You have to let yourself understand that. Do not overwork yourself and your mind and your interests. But being interested, like Aaron said, if a student is interested, grab that, encourage it, and get them to share with it. That's one thing, okay? One thing I do think that students often find interesting is that there is a demonstration of some kind. So how do levers work? I almost guarantee you if you show the concept of a fulcrum and a lever and you have a smaller child raising a bigger child up, you know, you actually do that in the classroom, and especially if they fall over, they're going to remember it. It can just be a tiny bit, like, how do you do this? And so I've become very interested in the theory of it. I now work as a construction estimator and a designer and all that kind of thing. What are load-bearing walls and what are not load-bearing walls and what's the composition of them and what kind of a truss can do what? That's fascinating to me. And even from an ancient history perspective, it's tremendously interesting. Do you know that the Romans created the truss, right? And that is why they could build the basilica, the huge building that would span large spots. Well, that's pure engineering. How do you get trusses made? The Greeks could not make anything bigger than 30 feet from pillar to pillar. That was the max that they could come. So they had a big building that was filled with pillars. It's just interesting. So I find that kind of fascinating. And if you can do a little bit of a demonstration with a touch of humor, people do find that interesting, even if it's only the humor. Now, maybe you would have something else to add to that.
I don't.
No, you're still looking.
I'm still,
yeah.
I do that every year. I have to teach science.
Yeah. So, are there years you don't have to teach science?
So every other year it's history.
Okay, so that's how your school does it. You do history one year, and then you do science. Is it always the same science?
It is.
Okay, so here's something that I will talk about later. And we can explore this in more in depth. Sometimes a change helps with stuff. To regain your interest or you're just kind of in a bit of a slump and you'd like it. A bit of a shift. Not a fundamental shift in which they're going from learning to ignorance. But a shift of stuff. And so maybe look for science books that would be appropriate for your age class that you have, that you could feel like your heart could just warm for it. It's just a tiny bit.
Okay.
Yeah, just look around a bit and ask some other people what they do, and maybe something can trigger there, right? Let's move on a bit, and we might come back to that. Are there any dangers that accompany high motivation? Yes?
You can try to do too many things, and then you run out of time and energy.
Yes. We only have so much time, and sometimes even that's, I mean, it's just not enough, period. But yes, we only have so much energy and so much time. Something I tell everybody who will listen to me is that everything has a cost. It does not matter what it is, everything costs something. And so you're paying for this. And when you pay that cost, you're not doing a different cost, right? Because you cannot do everything. You can't afford everything. So then I'm using the market terminology for energy and time as well as pure money, all right? Even whatever. So everything has a cost, and you have to remember that as you're doing stuff. What else? We'll run out of time if we try to be too motivated with everything. Is there another danger? Are there any other dangers that come with high motivation? Okay, let's start with you then. Sure.
You may look down on those that don't have motivation instead of kind of meeting them where they are and nurturing it.
Good. So I was thinking when you said looking down at the view, it's like your fellow teachers, right?
I was thinking students that like
those teachers, especially, you know, they're just kind of boring and they've gotten kind of worn out and tired and all of that. Yeah. So high motivation can lead you to be a bit critical for those people who do not share the same motivations or even the same level of motivation, right? Okay, good. You were going to say something, Judy.
I was going to say too high of expectations of other people, which kind of goes along with what you said.
Yeah, it is so interesting. This is something you have to wrestle with as all teachers, leaders, whatever. We must have expectations. We must have goals. We must have them. But they also can become crippling as we become angry and frustrated when they're not being met, when they're not coming. Like finding that balance of I am going to come in there and I'm going to expect you to behave. And I'm going to expect you to learn. And I'm going to expect this and that to come out of that. And then reality just bites. And it doesn't work the same with everybody. And even this at the same school and the same year and stuff like that. And we have to be able to not simply die from it, all right? So finding that balance of being okay when things are not where they should be, and at the same time pushing for them to get better, that's one of the great juggling, balancing acts that I think all leaders, but specifically in the schoolroom, you have to really work at. Okay, anything else with high motivation, a danger? Yes?
I think it's okay to stretch students. And a motivated teacher will do that, but is it possible to load too much on them, stretch them to the point where they snap?
Hey, is it possible to stretch a student to the point that they snap?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, okay, the voice of authority has spoken.
I know when they start throwing up, probably that's turning the pressure a little high.
Listen, again, that's right back to that balance thing I was just talking about. We need to stretch, we need to challenge, we need to get them going, but there are all kinds of things connected with that can be subconscious, unconscious, or even conscious, where it's a lot of image orientation. I want this school to look good, I want my students to behave. I have a friend, a person, who has taught music phenomenally well. And I've been hearing whispers that not all the parents are happy about it. Because when students don't quite cooperate, or they're not quite interested, or that type of thing, there is just kind of this, instead of the joy of music inspiring them on, it has become a drive to perform and enjoy it. Enjoy the beauty of it, for sure. That's in there, but not everybody has it. Some people don't seem to have it. Some people don't seem to get it. And some people definitely have it in different levels. All right? So my caution to that teacher would be you need to back off on some things. Don't lose your relationship over high expectations and the desire to challenge them, because it, children are wired differently, and it's interesting. We often think of maybe girls being more frail, but I heard somebody say recently at a wedding, the father of the bride, and in his address to the bride and groom, commented, "The male ego is very frail." All right, it's actually true. Okay, so that can impact people in different ways. So yeah, we somehow have to watch that. Okay, I don't want to just keep fishing. I'm going to tell you one other thing. Motivation is attached to our emotions. All right, and when emotions are running high, that can be good as far as a teaching device and that type of thing. But emotional content, when that is all that's there, is fundamentally weak, right? There needs to be something deeper than simply interest and love and passion, if I can put it that way. Like a serious commitment that it doesn't matter how boring it is, all of that stuff, we are going to have to face this. We are going to have to work with it, and it is not going away, right? And that thing of, I depend on motivation and I'm feeling good, I'm feeling fine with it, I'm wonderful, it's a wonderful feeling and it's lovely. It can become addictive and manipulative, all right? So, and of course, highly motivated speakers and leaders, politicians, who move entire populaces in a wrong direction, right? Okay. That's simply a statement of historical fact. So it's also in good directions. Okay? So, but it can go the other way as well. So motivation in and of itself is not always the good thing, right? We want to be aware of it. We need to have a core that is deeper than simply how motivated we are. All right, that's the dangers of, that's one of them. And again, we can come back to it. How do we lose motivation? Okay, we were motivated. We're not. Okay, go ahead. Nobody here has lost any of their motivation, so we don't know.
This is good.
Okay, so.
One thing that sometimes has been demotivating for me is when fellow teachers quit teaching, especially ones I've taught for several years. That can be demotivating.
For sure. Okay, so we're assuming you had a good relationship with them and things were going well, and yeah, it can be kind of like a part of your foundation went out, and it's a little bit tougher. Yeah, good? Okay, so losing fellow workers. Kate, go ahead, Aaron.
This is maybe a bad diet. Will do a lot of things to wreck your brain.
There you go.
And you're there in a sludge in your seat, unmotivated because you ate Pop-Tarts for the last week. Well, I mean, it's a physical getting to bed on time, things like that. I mean, you have to feel good to be motivated sometimes.
All right. How do we lose motivation? You hit about a number right there in the head. So first of all, one of them is actually the food that you put into your body. We're talking about the physical food. Okay. Why is it that we love the food that's not as good for us? That is an interesting little problem. But most of us do. I love junk food, at least some of it. And I know that people who have taught themselves not to like junk food and to like carrots and broccoli and things like that, that's awesome. I just have not somehow attained it. Okay. So, what you eat, okay? Obviously, you know this is coming. What you are taking into your mind and into your life impacts us enormously. And I do not think there has ever been a generation. Many of us grew up in protected settings, and we are still in a protected setting, but I don't think there's ever been a generation where there is so much information, and it can be good and it can be bad. It's completely just awash with it, all right? So even the Amish, all right, they're also impacted, although probably less. I think they are less. Well, maybe it depends on the community, all right. So we are ingesting things into our spirits and into our psyches at a rate that is absolutely incredible. All right? What are we feeding ourselves? Okay? It's hugely important. Okay? And I know very well from sad experience that just eating too much of a junk diet when it comes to what I'm reading or what I've watched or what I'm talking about or what I'm interested in, it just feeds into your holistic being, all right? So, how do we lose motivation? One of them is we're not eating correctly, let's put it that way, spiritually and physically, okay? The other one that you kind of mentioned, and it seems like they almost go in hand, is our rest habits. So I can talk maybe a little bit more about this later, but, well, actually, we're supposed to quit at 9:45, aren't we? After 9, yeah. Okay, we're going to have to speed up a bit. When we don't rest well enough, the Bible says young men are strong. Now, that can be appropriately translated young people. Okay, the men is a generic term for humanity, all right? Young people are strong. And you are amazingly strong. You are way stronger than what you realize, okay? And this is what I notice. They can be tough. You can stay up, you can go to bed way too late and still function the next day. That catches up with you. And it seems like it catches up with you most when you are in intense situations that involve lots of obnoxious children. All right? And it's amazing how much work it can take to go to bed on time. If you don't turn the light off, read something rather than look at your phone, right? Read something good. And it's not for, I just almost guarantee you, those words are going to start moving around after a while, and it can relax you, all right? Of course, there are lots of not good things to read, but it's better than seeing something and it's flickering around in front of you and whatever. I might be talking to the choir, but I'm suspicious that I'm not completely, all right? So, right? Teach yourself good rest habits. It takes discipline. I think more discipline than it used to. Like, it used to be you got so bored, you went to sleep. Okay? When it got dark, you went to sleep. It's just not that way anymore, okay? How do we lose motivation? I think there's just a whole bunch of them, but one of them is what we eat. Our sleep patterns or our rest patterns, and another one is what experiences we've had with our relationships, and that kind of boils down to what you're saying. When you're in difficult relationships with your students, your parents, your church, your own, your biological parents. When I said your parents before, I meant your students' parents. So that type of thing that can just give a twist and a hurt that is just very difficult to overcome. So I will say again, cultivate good relationships and cultivate good relationships with your students' parents. It's enormously important. Let them know that you are on their side and that you want to work with them. You care about their opinion and that they are more important to this child than you are, right? You're the little one, they're the big one. And you want to keep that in mind, you're just here to help, not the boss. Not to tell them what a terrible job they're doing because they're not getting their homework done at home or that type of thing. Whatever it takes, relate with those parents. That's 75% of the battle, 90% of the battle with your students. Okay, that you are not just you're going to tell mom and dad, but you're just together. You know it, and you just visit about it when you're at church or whatever. Tell them good stuff. Let them know how you love their children, and yeah, kind of, you know, but not on purpose, like not every time. Whenever you meet one of your students' parents, be ready to talk to them about that student and about how you enjoy them or whatever, or just something kind of positive. And then at times you need to address what's negative, and you have prepared that, all right? The relationship with your parents, with your students' parents, it's enormously important. All right, what's the connection between burnout and unmotivation? I think our first bell is gone. So let me tell you what burnout is. I'm just gonna start telling you stuff here. Okay, so burnout is not completely understood, and that is this. It is the feeling that people get when they are at work, but they do not think it matters. Right? What they are doing is ineffectual. Okay? It's not how hard you're working or how long they're working. People can survive almost anything as long as they think it's important. Now, they can wear out by just overworking themselves. That's not burnout. Burnout is when you are caught. You have committed yourself. You have to do this, but it's not working. It's not working. It is pointless. It's meaningless. When work is lost, it's meaning, all right? People go into burnout, right? And it can be debilitating, right? You just cannot keep on, right? So weariness then is when you have overextended yourself. And that will knock you out. Eventually, you're going to have to sleep. You're going to have to do something. You're going to have to do something different, right? So how do we avoid burnout?
Maybe take a break if
you need it. Take a break? Good. Whether it's burnout or weariness. Both of those. Good?
Ask yourself why you don't feel like what are you aiming at? What were you trying for? Mm-hmm. Why did you want this job? I don't know, maybe resetting your aim.
Mm-hmm. Refreshing. Okay. So we don't have enough time to completely go through this, but one of them is pray about it. Mm-hmm. Is there meaning here or isn't there? Am I in the wrong place? Is God simply getting me to move? I'll tell you something. I quit teaching. And after 26 years, that was actually a way bigger deal than what people might expect. All right? I was afraid of doing other something else because I didn't know how. I'm also starting over, and that's a little bit tough. All right? But I got to the place where I felt it was absolutely necessary that I needed to do something different. All right? And I had my community support and my family support and all of that, all right? But burnout is dangerous, okay? Watch it. If you're at this place where the meaning is leaving or is gone, right? Find it and allow yourself to realize that, you know what, maybe I need to quit. I don't know what's going to happen. I love these guys. I don't know what's going to happen to them, but somebody else needs to come in for a bit. All right? We are not our students' savior. That's true. Not even parents are. And parents are more responsible than teachers yet. So you can imagine that kind of a week sometimes. So hit that on. All right. The connection between motivation and age. What are some keys to keeping or regaining healthy motivation? The age and motivation and age, I'm just going to tell you, as you get older, you get more experience. Things get a little bit smoother. But you also get more tired. All right? And things of loudness. I used to be able to handle children being loud. I was loud right along with them. It changes. It did for me anyway. Okay. The loudness of it, I just could hardly work with it sometimes. Okay. What are some keys to keeping and or regaining healthy motivation? So develop healthy routines. You might need to change something. Teach yourself to intentionally rest. Healthy routines. Find a hobby. Pursue it. And study something. Do something you enjoy for the sheer sense of enjoyment that you get from it. Just do something you enjoy. Not something bad. Just something you can look forward to. All right? And develop a sense of humor. Talk about it cheerfully and laugh about it a bit. Prioritize. Everything has a cost. You have to give some things up. You have to. And you let it go and do it cheerfully, right? Learn to let go cheerfully and prioritize. Sometimes a change is needed. Okay, that's our end of our time. Thank you for coming. Be motivated. Go!